Women have been playing football for more than 150 years, and it's always been political. Some have been celebrated, but others have been ridiculed, criticized, and forgotten. This is the Forgotten 11, the hidden history of women's football.
I'm not going to the White House. No.
You know, there was a lot of critics talking about us, but we're back, so it's not been that long.
Give me the effing ball.
Playing like a girl means you're a badass.
Welcome to the Forgotten 11. I'm Chris. Before we get started today, we need to learn about one of the most famous people of the 20th century, Josephine Baker. Her life story is amazing and worth a full episode, but she didn't play football. Josephine Baker was an African-American dancer and singer. She was the first black film star in 1927. In the 1930s, she moved to Paris and became world famous. She became a French citizen, and then a French spy, and then a member of the French Resistance. She became a hero of the Second World War. She was awarded just about every medal the French government can award. The reason I bring up Josephine Baker, aside from her being an incredible woman, is that in the 1930s in Paris, she had a girlfriend, and that girlfriend had played soccer.
Bonsoir, my love. Par la lune descend bien vive. Bonsoir, my love. Il faut voir tu que l'on se quitte.
Most of the athletes I've covered on the podcast are, if not heroes, then role models. Since sport began, the fans, you and I, live a little bit through sports icons. There's some small part of us on the pitch when Brady Chastain beat the Chinese in 1999. Or maybe more recently, you remember Chloe Kelly getting that one goal in extra time at the Euros to bring home just the second trophy England has ever won. When our team does well, we feel that we have somehow, through sheer desire, passion, and loyalty, we've helped. Maybe. And we feel like we live a little bit through those athletes. I've never won a World Cup, but I feel like I know a little bit about what it's like because I watched Megan Rapinoe and Hope Solo do it. But then there are other players who you love to hate. Or maybe you just hate. Maybe we don't like their attitude or their style. Maybe they're just bad people. Or maybe, just maybe, they interrupt our collective dream. They pull us out of our collective fantasy and tell us to look elsewhere. Today, we have the story of one of those athletes. She was a hero of the First World War, and according to some, a traitor in the Second World War. But her story is a little bit more complicated than that. Some called her the hyena of the Gestapo, the Nazi secret police. The thing is, it's probably not true. Violet Morris was born in 1893. She was the daughter of a French noble family. She grew up mostly in a Catholic convent. As a child, she loved playing sports, all sports. By the time she was 15 years old, she was an accomplished swimmer and weightlifter. She also threw shot put, discus, and javelin. She often boasted, "Anything a man can do, Violet Morris can do." She was about 5'5" and 150 pounds, or 166 centimeters and 68 kilograms. She was strong and stocky. She was very athletic and very competitive. She married at about the age of 20, and then World War I broke out. She immediately signed up to help. At the time, she was not allowed to be a soldier, so she signed up to work with the nurses and soon discovered a new passion, driving. She drove ambulances and then messenger motorbikes. She drove like a maniac. And to be clear, cars, ambulances, motorcycles in World War I were not as safe as they are these days. There were almost no shock absorbers. If there was a seatbelt, it was there more to keep you from flying out of the car than to keep you safe in an accident. There was pretty much no safety equipment. Surviving a car trip uninjured on a regular road was a bit of an accomplishment. The Battle of Verdun was one of the bloodiest and most dangerous battles of World War I. And Violet Morris, being afraid of absolutely nothing, volunteered to drive an ambulance. Morris volunteered to drive one of these things past machine guns while being shelled by the Germans. And I'm going to quote one of her online admirers here. Her crazy daredevil driving skills and complete immunity to fear and fear-based effects got her a cushy job driving an ambulance on the front lines during World War I, where she would basically haul ass at maximum velocity in what was basically a modified Model T Ford, dodging German machine gun fire and swerving past artillery shells and bombed out craters in a furious effort to get critically wounded French soldiers to the hospital before they bled out and died. No pressure. And to give you an idea how bad the Battle of Verdun was, after 10 months of bombs and bullets and artillery shells exploding in and around Verdun, 2 million soldiers had died, and the battle lines barely moved. And for all 10 months, there's Violet Morris tearing through the battlefield in a giant moving target to save French soldiers. Yeah, anything a man can do, Violet Morris can do. Except there's a whole lot of men that wouldn't drive a giant truck through the Battle of Verdun, myself included. Well, after that, she gave up the ambulance. And she traded it for a motorcycle, and she was off to the Battle of the Somme, which was the second worst battle of the First World War. She became a motorcycle courier for the French forces. Now, being an ambulance driver might offer you a little protection from the bullets and shells, because doors and there's a roof. But a motorbike offers nothing. Through the whole Battle of the Somme, she drove her bike through the shelled craters, past machine gun fire, basically the worst obstacle course you could ever imagine. And she delivered intel and supplies wherever they were needed, and on several occasions, after she either wrecked the bike or it broke down, she repaired it on the spot, as bullets flew past her and shells landed nearby. So yeah, she was fearless, and arguably a true war hero for France.
Oh, my love, par la lune descend bien vite, en reste heureux, nous réunira tous les deux.
After the war, Violet Morris needed to keep busy. So, in 1917, she joined Femina Sport, and it turned out she was pretty good at football. You remember, Femina Sport is a team that played the Dick Kerr ladies. But in 1920, she joined Olympique de Paris. So I'm not sure she ever met or played against the Dick Kerr ladies. She knew about them. And she was eventually selected for the French national team. So she probably did play against the Dick Kerr ladies. In the 1920s, she was also on the French women's water polo team. If you remember Alice Miat, she organized the first several women's Olympics before the official IOC allowed women to compete. Violet Morris won both gold and silver medals at those games in both the shot put and the javelin. And she was pretty good at other sports. She won trophies and medals in shot put, archery, swimming, diving, tennis, weightlifting, wrestling, boxing, and boxing against men, aviation, and cycling. According to some, she won more than 200 trophies, awards, and medals. In the 1920s, Violet Morris was something of a celebrity. Not just as an accomplished athlete, but also for her apparent lifestyle. Violet Morris was gay and didn't care who knew. She wore men's suits, she smoked, and she swore in public. She dated several female movie stars. Among her friends were many famous Parisians, including Jean Cocteau and Josephine Baker. Yes, that Josephine Baker. So, Morris, a past war hero, and Josephine Baker, a future one. Violet Morris's fans truly loved her, and she had a lot of them, but not everyone loved her. In 1928, the French Women's Sporting Federation refused to grant her a sporting license, citing immoral behavior. This would keep Morris from competing in the 1928 Olympics. Morris appealed the decision, and the case went to trial. By the end of the trial, it seemed obvious that the Federation wouldn't grant her a license because she was gay, but they never said that outright. In the end, they cited an old law in France against women wearing pants. At the trial, Morris said, "Look around. See the women with their legs crossed and ask yourself, which is more immodest, their skimpy dresses or my pants?" She lost her case, and at the end of the trial, obviously upset, she said this: "We live in a country made rotten by money and scandals, ruled by speechifiers, schemers, and cowards. This country of little people is not worthy of its elders, not worthy of survival. Someday its decay will bring it to the level of a slave. But if I'm still here, I won't be one of the slaves. Believe me, it's not in my temperament." Since she was no longer allowed to compete in athletics, she threw herself into her car racing career. Around this time, this is kind of extreme, she had a double mastectomy. She said that the small cockpit of a race car, her boobs just got in the way. Whether it was sports or car racing, Violet Morris was good at winning. But the French Racing Federation eventually went the way of the Sports Federation and refused to grant her a license to race. Morris was probably pretty angry about this too. But she opened up an auto parts store in Paris and, along with a few employees, began building their own race cars. With that business and a little help from an inheritance, in 1933, Morris and her girlfriend, actress Yvonne Debray, moved into a houseboat called the Mouette, or Mouette, on the Seine River. In the mid-30s, Violet Morris began a minor singing career. And she was pretty good. She appeared or sang on the radio a few times. Whether she was known as an athlete, a racer, a lesbian, or a singer, people knew who Violet Morris was. In 1936, Adolf Hitler personally invited her to watch the 1936 Berlin Olympics, and she, of course, went. And this is where the rumors start. Remember, World War II is about to start, and one of the first things Hitler did was invading France. But before we get to that, a man named Joseph LeCam. LeCam was an unemployed former soldier. On Christmas Eve, 1937, LeCam got drunk and then got into an argument with someone on Morris's houseboat. He came back the next evening, also drunk, and got into another argument, this time with Morris. There was pushing and shoving, and then Joseph LeCam pulled out a knife. So Morris pulled out her revolver and fired it into the air. LeCam couldn't have been too smart because he lunged at Morris with his knife, so she shot him several times. He later died. There's never a dull moment with Violet Morris. Morris was arrested and tried for murder. She was eventually acquitted because the shooting was in self-defense. If you look Violet Morris up on the internet, you're going to find that she had a nickname. And you're going to find the story of a very different woman. Now, everything I've said up to this point, you'll find in just about any story of Violet Morris. But once the Nazis invade France, you'll find two stories. Here's the one most people hear. Violet Morris, the hyena of the Gestapo, a Nazi collaborator, a torturer, a Nazi spy. She burned her victims with lit cigarettes. She stole Allied secrets and gave them to the Nazis. She stole the plans to France's defenses at the Maginot Line, which is stupid. The Maginot Line was a huge bunker system to guard against a German invasion. But the thing is, all you have to do to invade France is walk around it. There's one story that she went around town with a whip, torturing passersby, looking for spies and resistance fighters. The story suggests she went from something of a famous socialite and war hero to spending time with the best actors and singers and poets and authors in Paris to being a bloodthirsty, rabid Nazi almost overnight. Now, remember, there were plenty of French people who didn't like Morris, either because she was gay or because she was loud and unladylike, because she spoke her mind, because she had killed a veteran. But she was a war hero, too. It seems that the French press had named her the hyena of the Gestapo well before the end of the war. So here's what she definitely did for the Nazis. She supplied gasoline because she ran a garage. The Luftwaffe used her garage, and she ran a chauffeur service which often drove Germans around. In other words, she was trying to make a living in the middle of an occupation and a war. Aside from rumors and slander, there's no evidence she did anything to help the Nazis aside from making a little money from them. Which, by the way, anyone and everyone in an occupied country has to do in some small way. The difference for Morris is that she had known grievances with the French sporting authorities before the war, and she had gone to the Hitler Olympics. Oh, right, and she was gay.
Bonsoir, my love, bien vite. Bonsoir, my love.
On April 26, 1944, Violet Morris was driving for a French family. By low, mom, dad, and two kids. The Bailo family were definitely Nazi collaborators. Morris was their hired driver. The French resistance, of which Josephine Baker, remember, she was a member, the resistance tampered with Morris's car. When her car broke down, the resistance were waiting. They killed everyone in the car. Now, Morris was no fan of the French sports authorities, but remember, she spent World War I driving and soldiering for her country. In the 1930s and early 40s, she spent her time with poets, writers, singers, dancers, and movie stars like Josephine Baker. Did she really steal plans to France's defenses at the Maginot Line? Did she really begin torturing her fellow citizens? What seems more likely to me is that she was a scapegoat. Yeah, she was openly gay and openly critical of French society. And she was a famous and controversial athlete. But it seems to me that it's likely that the story of the Bailo family got mixed in with Morris's story because she was already famous. And she became the villain because she was already famous and controversial. And the Bailo family was completely forgotten. Violet Morris is buried in an unmarked grave somewhere near Paris.
Bonsoir, my love, Dora Bien.